The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you doing?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. Yeah, we're still talking about two main subjects, Howard, and it's not Corona. We're talking about still the American elections, which of course are tomorrow, and everybody's eye is peeled to see what's going to happen there. And the other big topic of discussion in Israel is the weather. Are we going to get the start of the winter rains officially across the country? There have already been some rains in the south of Israel. There were some expectations even of stormy weather today. I'm looking outside. It's quite sunny, not so many clouds, and no sign of rain around the central part of Israel at all. But apparently there are some places that have already had some rain. So we're already in November and still really no sign of winter rain, which is really astonishingly late this year. Usually we would expect to receive the first rains around the end of September, certainly during the month of October, but up until now, really nothing to speak of.
Wow, that's crazy. That's really a bit worrying. Although last year the rains were very good, the Kinneret's at a very high level, or certainly was at the end of
True.
The rainy season. So,
True. I mean, we've got two things to be thankful for, that last year we did have good rains, even though I think they also started late. But what has become more and more of a feature of the Israeli water system is that we are using more and more desalinated water, which means that, the natural water resources are not as significantly utilized during the summer season, and we're able to get by with a lot more water in our water resources at the end of the summer than has been up until now, in spite of the fact that, of course, our water usage is constantly going up, both for residential and for industrial purposes. But even so, fortunately, our desalination technology is really proving itself to be literally a lifesaver.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we do have to talk about COVID in some way, because but at least the news is a little improved on the COVID front. It's the first time that Israel's reduced below 10,000 in months.
So at the moment, apparently there are something like 9,760 patients who are infected with coronavirus. 392 are considered to be in serious condition, and 171 are connected to ventilators being intubated. So these numbers are really a lot better than the ones that we've seen recently, something like 500-600 new patients being diagnosed approximately every day, some of them sometimes even less, 300 to 400. So certainly the numbers are going down dramatically. Schools started yesterday again for the first time in months, at least the very younger children, the primary school grades 1 to 4 went back to school yesterday. Grade ones this year have had 2 weeks at school since the school year began on the 1st of September. The children are back at school in capsules, and not necessarily 5 days a week, but at least some level of getting back to school. And there was a noticeable increase of traffic on the road yesterday, which made me wonder whether parents were just not returning back to work in larger numbers as a result of children returning to school. So that's at least a good sign. And of course, the fact that we are officially now over the second wave, even though the rest of Europe seems really to be going to major lockdowns as part of their second wave. So I'm not quite sure if Israel is ahead of the curve in a good way. In other words, whether that's a good thing and we can sort of lead the way, as it were, or whether it's a bad thing because we couldn't manage to hold out after the first wave as long as other places managed to hold out before the second wave took hold. I think it's probably the second, that our second wave just came a lot sooner because people were just less well behaved and not holding out so well. But at least there are good indications. Some of the shops now reopened, certain beauty salons and hairdressers and places like that reopening gradually, slowly but surely. It's expected that shops will reopen. Restaurants are now available for takeaways as well as ordering in from home. Not quite yet tableside service, but let's hope that that will get there. And there is talk about malls reopening, although I did see that there were reports that some malls were going to take unilateral action and open themselves, even though the government official rules at the moment don't allow them to open. Also, the first dose was administered yesterday to a volunteer who will be the first human trial of Israel's vaccine. And what was quite ironic was that this particular person was not due to be the first one, but the actual person who was labeled as going to be the first to receive the vaccine was tested just before receiving the vaccine and was found to have had antibodies as a result of having contracted corona without even knowing about it. So here's a person who had signed up for the trial, didn't know he'd previously had corona, didn't know he previously had that he had antibodies existing in his system. And when they tested him, they immediately disqualified him from the trial as a result of the antibodies that his body had. But here we have somebody else who took his place, and that trial will be slowly expanded to include 80 volunteers, and then after that something like 960 people in December. So that vaccine trial has already now kicked off. The first vaccinations have been administered, and those individuals, those volunteers, are under supervision at the hospital to see how they react. And not such a good story is one about clergy person from the north, a Bedouin clergy person, sorry, not Bedouin, Druze clergy person from the north, who passed away as a result of COVID and whose body was literally kidnapped from the hospital in order for his followers to have a funeral for him, which was outlawed by the government. In the end, they managed to somehow secretly kidnap his body, have this huge funeral in Majd el Shams, which is right in the Golan Heights in the north. So another dangerous situation. Majd el Shams, unfortunately, being one of those red locations where there's been quite a high incidence of coronavirus infections, and certainly no social distancing was practiced at that secret funeral, which apparently attracted thousands of followers. So again, unfortunately, those events are not going to be helpful. There was an attempt to try to broker a compromise between the Druze community and the health authorities to find a way to have a funeral not necessarily involving the burial of the body. The body, I think they were proposing, would be buried with a very limited number of people around, but then another location would be found with social distancing, which would allow people to attend a funeral service of some sort. That was rejected. They went their own way in the end. So unfortunately, those types of actions are not going to be particularly helpful. But the good news, at least, is that children are back at school, and let's hope that, you know, that particular trend will continue, and that we won't find suddenly another surge into what is anticipated to be a third wave, which everybody's already preparing for.
Absolutely crazy. Israel has offered assistance to Turkey and Greece following an earthquake on Friday. The earthquake registered 6.9 on the Richter scale. I'm actually fascinated. Israel, of course, has an excellent relationship with Greece. Has Turkey accepted assistance?
Well, it's not clear whether Turkey's actually accepted the assistance or not. Israeli rescue and search and rescue teams have previously been accepted for help in Turkey when there have been disasters of different types that have occurred in Turkey. This one on Friday was an earthquake which was near, and it really hit the hardest, Turkey's third largest city, Izmir. Apparently 49 people were killed. The earthquake itself seems to have been centered quite near to the Greek island of Samos, where a number of people were killed as well. And there were also reports of many tsunamis, both in Samos and also around the coast of Turkey, where people were reported to have been endangered, and even some people drowned as a result of this mini tsunami that took place. But in Turkey, quite a serious situation. Apparently 2,000 to 3,000 people perhaps left homeless, many buildings damaged, 49 people killed. So Defense Minister Benny Gantz immediately put Israel's search and rescue team on alert, offered the assistance to Turkey. Turkey actually did particularly thank those countries, including Greece and Israel, who had offered help to Turkey. It's not clear, however, whether the Israeli search and rescue team did go out there. But as I've said before, the Israeli search and rescue team is quite well known in Turkey, having been there a number of times before, but a pretty serious earthquake, and one of many that aren't expected In this particular region, you know, we've been speaking already for a number of years about the fact that there is an expectation of another large earthquake. Lots of talk within Turkey about how prepared Turkey is for an earthquake. Lots of criticism of President Erdogan for his urban planning or lack of urban planning, particularly in Istanbul, where apparently many open spaces have now been built up with buildings and not necessarily earthquake-proof. And there is a view that holds in Turkey that if there was an earthquake to hit particularly in Istanbul or in one of the other major cities, that it could be a very, very substantial disaster because they're not particularly well planned for it.
Yeah, very problematic indeed. The Palestinian Authority is denying that it has decided to accept Israel's tax money. So what's the conflict here? What are the conflicting considerations for the PA in accepting this money?
Well, we've discussed previously that the Palestinian Authority has run out of money, that the government employees employed by the Palestinian Authority have apparently not been paid their salaries for quite some time already. The Palestinian Authority have made application to the European Union to get some aid money, and the European Union said all the while that you're not accepting your tax money from Israel, we are not going to come and finance that on your behalf. And the story, of course, is that Israel does collect tax money on behalf of the Palestinian Authority, whether it be for import and export of goods, whether it be for employment of people who live within the Palestinian Authority area but work in Israel, and the tax monies that are collected from the that are deducted from salaries are due to be paid over to the Palestinian Authority, and there isn't an agreement between Israel and the Palestinian Authority to pay this money over, and Israel stands there willing to pay what is quite a substantial sum of money to the Palestinian Authority, which they desperately need because they, as I've said before, they are really out of money. Apparently there's something like 2.5 billion shekels available to the Palestinian Authority that they refuse to accept, or they have up until now refused to accept. And the reason that they refuse to accept this money is because Israel said, while you are making payments to families of terrorists and people who have committed acts of terror against Israel, we're going to deduct those sums from the tax money that we pay over to you. So Israel said, you know, we're going to penalize you for your support of terror against Israel. And all the time, Israel's got the numbers, the sums of money that are being paid over apparently by the Palestinian Authority to these families of terrorists who've committed acts of terror against Israelis. And that's deducted from the tax money that Israel is prepared to pay over. And as a result of that, the Palestinian Authority said, we are going to effectively boycott this money. There were reports that the Palestinian Authority capitulated, that they were forced to accept the money out of no choice. But they've come out strongly denying that. And it's really not clear where they're going to get money from to pay salaries, because there were strong reports circulating around the Palestinian Authority that their government employees would be paid full salaries as soon as this money is received. I don't know who to believe here, because some reports are saying that they have decided to receive the money and others are still very much denying it.
Yeah, crazy situation. And finally, Israeli electric company officials are denying a nationwide power outage on Thursday night that was a result of a cyber attack. What's the official cause of the outage?
Well, the fact is that there was a massive outage which really affected large parts of Israel, and we, as opposed to you guys, are not really accustomed to power outages here. And so every time there is a power outage, it's a big deal, and particularly when it's so widespread, affected towns and cities across Israel, including Jerusalem and Ashdod, Herzliya, Tel Aviv, Ramat Gan, Givatayim, Rishon LeZion. Traffic lights were out, street lights were out, parts of Jerusalem were in darkness. So it was very, very surprising indeed, even though the outage itself didn't last all that long and power was restored pretty soon. Even in my home, the power went out during the night. I have to admit that I didn't notice it until the morning when I noticed that the power had gone out during the night. But quite large swathes of Israel were without power, at least for a short period of time. And of course, this led to speculation that this might have been as a result as a result of a some sort of a cyber attack. This is the first go-to reason now. When anything kind of unusual happens, when anything out of the ordinary happens, it could have been a result of a cyber attack. But the Israeli Electric Corporation said that the blackouts were caused by a malfunction in power production units, which whatever that means. It doesn't sound like a reason which we can all really subscribe to. But apparently, according to the Israeli Electric Corporation, that was the deal. So we will believe it for what it is. And I'm guessing if it was some sort of a cyber attack, we'll never really know.
Mm. Anthony, before I let you go, of course, we know the news that Sean Connery passed away over the weekend. Who is your quintessential James Bond?
Roger Moore, for sure. And maybe it's a sign of my age, but when I grew up watching James Bond movies, it was very much the Roger Moore character that I grew up with and that I became accustomed to. So he is for certain my James Bond man. But Sean Connery was an absolute hero, a legend in his time, and of course he will be sadly missed. He was 90 years old, got to a ripe old age, so good for him. And he will never ever be able to lose the James Bond title, will he?
No, he certainly won't. Thanks, Anthony Reich. Have a great day. We'll catch you tomorrow. It is 8:01.